As one of America's largest financial services companies, Nationwide makes simplicity a priority so financial professionals can help their clients achieve their retirement goals. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Bloomberg Audio Studios.
Podcasts, radio, news.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast. I'm Tom Keene, along with Paul Sweeney. Join us each day for insight from the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
Now, a three-hour conversation with Dan Ives of Wedbush. I don't know, where's he been?
I have no idea where he's been.
He's so large now that we can't even get him on the show. Dan, let's talk Tesla first. I know you're going to give me the positive spin. Liam Denning writes a beautiful column, Musk tells Tesla dream, but don't ask for the details. What's the timeline across April, May, June to where Musk has to seep out the successful initiation of the so-called plan?
Look, I think last night was a big start because the sub-30K vehicle, I'll call it a Model 2.5, it's going to be accelerated. I mean, this will probably come first half 2025. And more details clearly have to come out, but this is no new factory line. I think this is a huge start for what the bulls needed to hear on the Tesla story, especially given the dark days and what was really a train wreck 1Q.
I mean, Paul, to jump in here, because, you know, Dan and I don't agree on this. I mean, you know, he's a good friend, but, you know, I'm with Liam Denning. I'm like, are you kidding me? That was a conference? Was that a conference call, Dan Ives?
Relative to the last few calls, which we talked about, right? I mean, it was a disaster. Last night, you actually had a vision. The growth strategy was laid out. Talked about the lower cost vehicle. And the fears were they were going to go straight to robo-taxis and autonomous. That was a big overhang in the stock. And then you look at the margin, the cost cuts. I finally feel like there's a blueprint.
Paul,
after a few quarters.
Paul, help me here. I'm on 6th Avenue. I'm trying to get up to Central Park South.
Sure, who is
to go left or right. It's a roulette. What's the robo-taxi do when all the cars are turning right on 58th Street? Explain what a robo-taxi does.
Well, they're going to do...
It's 6th Avenue and 58th Street.
It's going to employ artificial intelligence. AI is what's going to happen
there
for you.
AI.
Hey, Dan, so I guess I got off that call yesterday. I was walking on the boardwalk down the shore. I actually dialed into the call to listen, and I got off the call saying, I either believe Elon and I buy the stock, or I don't and I sell the stock. Is that where we are now with this stock, do you think?
Definitely. Look, I think it's the knives have been sharpened. So bulls and bears, you make the bet here.
Yeah.
And I heard from many bears, obviously over the last, you know, called 6 to 8 hours, they'll have their stuff. But I think for the bulls, they finally have something to hang their hat on. And again, betting against Musk for the last 4 or 5 years, it's like betting against the Knicks. In this series.
He has done this before, there's no question. Yep. Okay, I'm Tesla'd out. Dan Ives on Microsoft. That's going to be a different call, a different earnings report, isn't it?
Oh, look, this is the tactician. I mean, you have the Hall of Famer Nadella. The AI revolution, it's here. And I think the monetization that we're starting to see at Microsoft, we see it, you know, across, I think, the software layer. This is the call the whole street's going to be watching. Because it shows where the monetization of AI is as the baton gets handed from NVIDIA to Microsoft.
So, Dan, I mean, that's kind of where I think A lot of investors would like to see this Microsoft story go. It's up 8% year to date. It is not getting fully priced in as an AI story, it seems like, relative to some other names like NVIDIA. What do you think Microsoft needs to say on their call tomorrow to maybe kind of get that story across a little bit more?
Look, I think it's really numbers. It's showing Copilot in terms of what deployments look like. It's looking at the monetization. Of course, Azure, the cloud number, is the big focus, as that actually continues to be something that's probably the best barometer in terms of what the Microsoft story is doing. Look, they have massive tailwinds. And I think the broader story we're going to see across tech earnings season is the AI revolution's here. The baton's been handed from semis to software, names like ServiceNow, Salesforce, Oracle, among others.
And Dan, on Microsoft, I go back, I just take everything from pre-pandemic. Basically, Microsoft modeled out 2024, has done a double in revenue since 2019. Is that an extrapolative function? Can you take a double in revenue over 5-6 years and take that out into the Dan Ives 2030?
Well, and Tom, I take it one even step better. It's really about the AI and the cloud component, because 55% of revenue is cloud for Microsoft today. Next 3 to 4 years, it's going to be 70-75%. So that multiple is going to continue to expand because of that higher margin business. That's why I believe it's, right, you know, there's a $4 trillion market cap in a year.
Dan, a rep on you is you're an Uber bull. What is your least favorite tech company? Which one has the Ivesian radar up?
Look, I'd say least favorite. It's some of the legacy names. Like if I look at like a Cisco as a share donor, I think some of those are the ones that are really going to struggle if they don't get aggressive. But even look at Cisco, they buy Splunk, right? I mean, the point is, this is going to be really an arms race that's going ahead. But Tom, like we've talked about, I think tech, this is just second, third inning of this tech bull market.
And Dan, I guess one of the questions for a lot of folks who follow tech is just kind of this AI, trying to size out AI, and how much of the AI capex, how much of the AI investment over the next 5+ years is incremental, or is it just taking from other parts of the tech stack? How do you model that out?
I think about 60-70% of it is incremental, because the difference is that it's revenue generating. I mean, if you look at the use cases, they're revenue generating. This is not just spending on infrastructure. And I think that's what's happening really across verticals. And we're starting to see it now. I mean, you look at Palantir, it's a good example where the use cases are exploding. And the CapEx is just massive, not just from big tech, but I think what we're seeing across the board.
I mean, you know, Dan's like got the sweatshirt thing going. For those of you not on YouTube, I mean, it's a stunning pink. Do you do 5 or 10 miles this morning? Are you going to go out for, you know, pre-morning jog, Dan?
I think I'll do a little Peloton and, you know, to get the heart rate up.
Yeah, it's good.
That's what I do.
I take Tang Zero for the heart rate. Dan Ives, thank you so much with Wedbush.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Right now, she's more than an Ethenberger. She is exquisite in the analysis of the American economy. Lindsay Piggs joins us now with Stiefel. Lindsay, how do you use Capgood's ex-Air, ex-Boeing non-defense. How do you use one of these obscure statistics?
Well, I wouldn't argue that it's overly obscure. When we look at capital goods orders and we exclude aircraft and defense, what we're really doing is removing that volatile transportation component. And we can see then the underlying trend for business investment. And in fact, the reason that we need to do that is because when we look at something like last month's numbers, transportation plunged nearly 20%. So we need to take out that volatility to really get a sense where business investment is going. And right now, it seems to be still positive, but very minimal growth in terms of those capital, those investment dollars flowing out into the marketplace.
Elon Musk in a call last night, he says, I want to see cap goods orders, non-defense, ex-Air, ex-Tesla.
Ex-Tesla.
That's coming
exactly.
Next.
So, Lindsay, just stepping back here, what's kind of the Stiefel GDP call for the remainder of this year and maybe for next year? I mean, I think a lot of folks feel like the economy may not be working for them despite some of the headline numbers.
Well, I think the economy right now is still solid. We're still seeing consumer spending. We're still seeing businesses investing. But as I mentioned, we're losing momentum. We're seeing those heightened signs of fatigue. So what does that translate into for GDP? We're looking for about a 2.5% average pace for 2024. Now, of course, volatility quarter to quarter aside, Q1 may come in a little stronger, but 2 to 2.5% for the current year. The bigger question is, where do we go into 2025? Because if we continue to lose momentum, we've gone from 5% in the third quarter to let's call it 3% at year end. If we hit that range of 2, 2.5 this year, what if we continue to lose momentum into next year? Now we're virtually falling below the bare minimum that you would expect from a developed economy. But at this point, is the Fed still tolerating above target inflation? So that's my biggest concern, that we're slowly moving into more of a stagflation scenario.
I asked this question the other day, Lindsay, but the fact is a central bank can't get out front, whether it's ECB or Fed or the Bank of Thailand. I mean, they have to wait and go ex post, right?
I would argue the Fed is, right now, the Fed is backing itself into the corner. The Fed should have risen rates, it should have raised rates higher. Now that they see inflation reversing course for three consecutive months since the start of the year, they need to re-engage, raise rates to a sufficiently restrictive level to get price pressures under control. And we can start to talk about a sustainable recovery. The longer they slow play this, the more price pressures become entrenched into the economy, and the more difficult it's going to be to ever get us back to that 2% target.
Cancel the pigs at lunch at the Eccles building. That's all I can say. Folks, what you just heard there from, this is classic Lindsay Piegza. What she just said is a huge deal.
So Lindsay, just to be clear here, you think that inflation is such that the Fed's next move should be a rate increase versus a cut?
When we look at inflation, the target is 2%. The target is not 3. The target is not 3.5. So the Fed has not met their mandate of stable prices. And with momentum now turning to the upside, I think the Fed has more work to do. Now, that's my preference for what the Fed should do. That's not what I necessarily expect the Fed to do. This is a Fed that desperately wants to provide relief. So I do still think that the next move is likely a rate cut, but I think that would be a material mistake on the part of the central bank.
Wow. So inflation, is your sense that this inflation that we've seen in the past 3 months, that's something that's not a blip. That's something more.
I do think it's something more. If you think about the motivation for the Fed to raise the rates, it's to increase borrowing costs, make that more onerous, slow consumption, and by extension, slow the economy and result in more benign inflation. But when we look at this consumer, there is still a good amount of spending and borrowing power out there in the economy. So clearly the Fed has not done enough to slow, let alone break the consumer, to ensure a return to price stability.
What's the response of your clients, and particularly your institutional clients, Lindsay, when you say this? I mean, you know, I'm not going to say you're an outlier call here. I think Jim Bianco's really led with the idea disinflation vectors out of tune. But these are really aggressive comments you're making. What is the response of your institutional clients to this?
Well, again, this is what I would hope the Fed would do. But when we look at our forecast, when we look at the messaging from the Fed does Fair. Appear willing yeah. To tolerate above target inflation. So again, our expectation is that the Fed will offer at least one, if not two, rate cuts by the end of the year, given their desire to continue to perpetuate these solid conditions in the economy. But when we look at, I think, the longer run stability of the economy, the longer run ability for us to get back right. to price stability, that's where I struggle, because historically we see right. that the Fed does need to raise rates above the previous okay. peak in inflation.
Well, when Kashkari's out the door and you're the president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Minnesota, Lindsay Piegza, just simply, if we get a Piegza rate rise, does that push us into recession?
I don't necessarily think a recession is necessary to get price stability, but I do think that a much slower growth rate would likely be the outcome, which is not necessarily, again, a something that we need to avoid at all costs. The normal fluctuations of the business cycle are very healthy, but the biggest issue is getting us back to a point where inflation is under control, and that allows everyone to enjoy and participate in the economy.
I just sent one of our interns a note, Lindsay. I want to get you on next week after PCE.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, I think these folks, these are wow comments. These are, you know, and again, this is the prescriptive idea, Paul, the should of it.
Yes.
Or could. And you're saying, what will they do? They're just going to hold rates here, Lindsay, until they see more data?
I do think the Fed is on an extended pause for now. But again, if inflation stabilizes at these levels, with the Fed willing to tolerate above target inflation, I think the Fed would be willing to give us 25 or 50 basis points of cuts by year end. But if we don't see further improvement in the inflation data,
right.
they would likely return to the sideline for a second round okay. extended pause.
Lindsay, thank you. Just superb. We'll feature yep. that on Single Best Idea today out on Apple Podcasts. Those are stunning statistics from Dr. Piegza. Anurag Rana in Chicago's Encyclopedic on a Cloud, and Mandeep Singh picks up the pieces on Meta as well. Thrilled to have them with us right now into this tech earnings season. I guess I got to go to Meta first. Facebook is yep. what I call it. Like
sure.
you change the symbol.
I know.
Mandeep Singh, just simply, Zuckerberg, did he start all this cost cutting? Is Zuckerberg the one that gave the billionaire set permission to cut costs?
Yeah, and he was quite aggressive, and he was right in terms of pivoting to AI and the cost cuts.
It's up 358% from the Mandeep Singh bottom after yeah. Singh said, shut yeah. up and buy it.
Yeah, look, I think everyone had their doubts whether this company can ever grow double-digit again, the top line, and they have shown, you know, they have executed around their cost cuts, and also from a product perspective, they have made a lot of changes in terms of the ad stack, pivot to AI. I think kind of moving away from Metaverse last year was a great bet. And it's paid off in terms of, you know, what they are doing with ad impressions and pricing versus what the other players are doing.
Hey, Anurag, out in Chicago, the tech hub of Chicago, I got the stock at Microsoft. I'm surprised it's only up 8% year to date. I thought it would have been more. It seems like these guys are just hitting on all cylinders. It's a great AI play. What is the story on Microsoft these days? What do you expect to hear from them, see from them, from their earnings?
It's still trading at over 30 times earnings compared to, you know, Apple at 23 times. So always remember that yep. you know, the market cap is so high at this point. So some of those expectations are already baked in for what they're going to realize, whether it's on the AI side or whether it's on the, you know, the GitHub or Office 365. So there's a lot of that, I would say, is currently baked into the price.
Oh, good.
No, I was going to say, Mandeep, Facebook, Google, again, Tom and I, we go old school verbiage here. Facebook, Google, it's a play on digital advertising in very large part. What's the state of the digital advertising market out there? Because you look to linear television and all they have is healthcare ads for various diseases. They don't have any real advertisers anymore. Are they all on digital?
And so that secular move is still playing out. I would say that, you know, the sentiment around small businesses is still pretty weak. And when you look at a company like Meta, they are exposed more to small business ad spending. So I'm surprised they're able to grow top line 25%, even with the SMB spending being weak. And some of it is easier comps, so that'll get tougher in the second half. But still, it's pretty remarkable.
And now for all of you worldwide, we go CFA with Anurag Rana and Mandeep Singh. Okay, I want to look at discounted cash flow. Mm-hmm. And there's this idea of terminal value. Now, the triple leveraged all cash fund is on a perpetuity terminal value. I mean, we're just going out forever. Mandeep Singh, in tech in general, in these magnificent 4, 5, 6, 8, whatever it is, how do you study terminal value, or is that impossible?
No, I think with companies of these sizes, in terms of where their top line is, clearly, you know, for them to keep growing double digit, it's extremely tough. And so you got to model in growth decelerating. But what they have shown us in the past 18 months is there's so much leverage to be gained from cost cuts. They were not running efficiently. And that's what I think is a key driver.
Nicely framed here. Anurag Rana, how do you do a terminal value, for example, on Microsoft? Because I got double-digit revenue growth. I got to model that in. Maybe it's a harmonic deceleration, whatever you're doing. And Mandy correctly says there's a new religion in cost cuts. So where's your terminal on Microsoft? Do you go out a decade?
Yeah, and you know, with Microsoft, there's a slight difference because they are spending a lot on data centers. So I have a concept that is, you know, you want to look at operating cash flow more than you want to look at free cash flow right now, because their CapEx is more than 3x. So if you see the operating cash flow growing at the face it is, it's actually getting to a point that it's getting better than Apple at this point, with the potential of growing top line between 10 to 15% at least for the next 5 years. So I think Microsoft is in a better position than any other tech company right now, in our view, because of the ability to drive those operating cash flows.
And Tom, just looking at the FA function for Microsoft, CapEx in their fiscal 2020 year was $15 billion. This year, for the June 24 year, $43 billion is the forecast.
The operating margin on Microsoft, folks, is 40%, 42%, 44%. When do these get too big, Mandeep? I mean, the first business book I read was Ida Tarbell, Standard Oil. I'm 15 years old. I'm reading Ida Tarbell. Nice. I didn't have
explains
a life.
Explains a lot, right, Lisa?
Okay, but just thank you, Lisa. When do they just get too big for Washington? I mean, if you extrapolate out Anurag Rana's operating cash flow, there's a point where they're too big, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I would use Meta as a proxy. Before they started investing in Reality Labs, their operating margin was north of 50%. So it got to a point where they had to do something with all the cash that they were generating, and they started investing in Reality Labs. And look, the regulators, they are looking at all of these companies, including the partnerships. That's a new way to acquire for a lot of these companies. But in the end, you know, they are terrific business models, and they are sustainable.
Free cash flow pre-pandemic, Facebook, 21 gazillion. It's a double, 43 gazillion up to 48 gazillion. Mandeep Singh, Anurag Rana, when do they get too big?
See, I would say for a software company, something between 45 and 50% is achievable. You know, I remember covering Visa and MasterCard about, 15 years, 20 years ago. Right now, their margins are 55% and somewhere in that range. So operating margins for software companies, probably peak around 50%. And we only have a handful of companies right around that mark. Adobe is somewhere closer, and Microsoft's going to get there between 45 and 50.
Good morning, Meredith Whitney. Did you see Visa's earnings report?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's like there's a printing press.
People are spending like crazy. Yeah. Anurag, as we head into this tech earnings season here, how much are we going to hear about AI? Is it going to be every other word, every third word? Where are we in kind of the development, the evolution of AI? I know you and Mandeep and your teams have done a lot of research on this.
I would say very early innings. And, I think this is not going to change, at least for the next few years, when we see more and more product development from all these companies. You know, right now, barring Microsoft, none of the big software companies have been able to monetize it in a proper way. And I think the next year, we're going to see more monetization, but more new products coming out, because right now we are seeing the bulk of the investments going into, the hardware and the infrastructure piece of it.
I just, my head is spinning over where we are versus like Nifty 50 in my Ute.
I know.
Mentioned Ken Olson and Decker earlier. I mean, this is, Mandeep, this is totally different than 1998-1999. I mean, there was a lot of nonprofit going on. All these people are, is it basically on a 90-day basis they're minting money and we have the distraction of what Tim and Carol do at 4 p.m.?
And they have the deep pockets to invest. So the one big difference here is all these companies that are investing in CapEx, they can afford to do that and without a big hit to their margin. So clearly, I think the fact that they have the data and the CapEx wherewithal, that's what drives these.
Okay, I got 10 seconds. I'm so sorry. Are we going to hear share buyback announcements?
Yes.
You got to be kidding me.
Meta announced a dividend. That was symbolic, even though less than 1% dividend yield. But clearly, Google is on the verge of doing something similar. The street is expecting. So waiting to hear
this
that.
This is fun. Let's do this again. Anurag Ron in Chicago. Mandeep Singh with our studios.
Nobody ever says make it complicated. That is why Nationwide makes simplicity a priority by providing financial professionals with straightforward, client-ready resources. From clear strategies to help clients meet retirement savings and income needs, to ways to cover rising healthcare costs and more, Nationwide simplifies planning so more time can be spent helping clients. Nationwide is on your side. Nationwide Investment Services Corporation, member FINRA, Columbus, Ohio.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.
On Apple CarPlay, on YouTube, it is the front pages. My people said Lisa was wound up today.
Oh,
Lisa, how do you start?
Fired up. Okay, so walking around New York City streets, what do you see everywhere?
Scaffolding.
Yeah. It's everywhere.
Don't get me going.
See, this
don't
is
get
it.
Me
it's
going.
A hot button issue. Okay. Did you know there are more than 8,500 scaffoldings around the city streets? If you were to stretch them out, it would go from Manhattan to Montreal. That's how much we have. That's what they're saying. Okay. This is the New York Times. Now, they're supposed to be temporary, right? But here's the problem. There's nearly 1,000 that have been in place for more than 3 years.
Yeah.
So they're sticking around. There's a lot of regulations around it. City officials want to do something about it. They
just
want to change it.
Fix it.
Yeah.
The whole place, there's parts of Midtown, folks. It's like Place Vendôme in Paris without the charm.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like miles of scaffolding.
And it's, I think you just got to go around and just take it down. I mean,
Lisa, what are they going to do? In your reporting, what are they
going
to do?
So they're going through, they want to put all these reforms down. So they want to reduce how many there can be, how long they can be up. They want to increase the fines. That's what they think they're going to do so they can strengthen the enforcement of it. So they think that if they increase these fines, hit hard on enforcement, it's going to take some of
tomorrow.
These down.
Okay. I mean, to me,
this seems like an easy one. If I were a politician, this would be an easy win for me to go out and get.
You have to have them up for safety.
Yep.
I get that.
Of course,
everybody
of course. When there's
agrees.
Construction.
I've had a friend in, you know, I get it. But if it's been up for 3 years and nothing's going on, take
that's
it down Tuesday.
Yep, exactly.
That's the problem.
All right, what else we got?
All right, airlines. This is a good one for travelers.
Yes.
They now have to pay automatic refunds for things like canceled flights. This is new from the U.S. Department of Transportation. Came out today. So they have to provide these automatic refunds. This is to, from, within the U.S. if their flights are canceled or even if they're altered, significantly altered. There are certain restrictions for that, too.
Yep.
But the goal is just to make it easier for to get people to get their money back, to make those refund policies more consistent from one airline to the next, because it differs as you go from airline to airline. Travelers will also get refunds for checked bag fees if the bag is lost, and also if it's not delivered within 12 hours of domestic flights. So there's another bonus there. And you're going to get it right away. It's automatic refund. So however you paid, whether credit card or even cash, then that's how you
So I don't have to stand in line with like 5,000 other people that could customer service in Newark for United.
So it's going to be, yeah.
Usually I just eat it. I'm like, all right, my flight's canceled. I'm going home.
But now you don't have to.
Okay, very good. That's good news.
You can get your money back.
Can we do an audible here?
Yes.
Did I hear yesterday Terminal A at Newark won some award?
Yes.
Yeah, Michael Barr had that news story. We won some award, or they won some award for like greatest terminal. Now it is.
It's nice.
Awesome. It is great. And the best thing about the new Terminal A is when you get off your flight and you need to get your Uber, it's a very organized, easy way to access you. Unlike Terminal C, which is a free-for-all, and you put your life at risk.
You'd have to take a tram sometimes. Yep. It was a little...
So anyway, they did a good job. Terminal B is now undergoing the similar type of construction renovation. So
We're getting there. After years, the negativity about this, we're getting there. If they just fix the potholes on 58th Street. Next.
That's going to take an eternity. American Airlines. Do either of you have the advantage, the loyalty points for American Airlines?
I'm not an American guy. I'm not a DFW person.
Well, they're changing how flyers can earn rewards again, because they've done it before. A lot of airlines are changing it. Here's the difference. Okay, so starting in July, travelers will only receive loyalty points, AAdvantage miles for airfare, if they book directly with American or one of its partners or a preferred travel agency. That's the only way we can do it. The co-branded credit cards, that's not going to be affected. Okay. That can get you your miles. But it just shows how they're continuing to change, to try and get in some new customers, get new people hooked on American.
Paul, don't you think from a securities analysis standpoint, it's just a tough business?
It really is. I think I'm so surprised that, you see these folks and they make money in one business and they say, oh, I'm going to go start an airline. Why would you want to get into
airline? American Airlines, 10-year track record, Microsoft, 28% per year, Disney tanking, 5% per year. American Airlines, -7% per year, again, off the pandemic.
It's a tough margin. It's a low margin business, and you've got fuel costs you have to deal with.
You've got people like Lisa arguing with you.
Yeah, exactly.
But people are serious about their points.
The last time I did a La-Di-Da flight, I had to stand in the lounge going out, and I had to stand in the lounge coming back. That's how messed up
it is. The lounge is packed. Okay.
The lounge literally there were no seats.
See, I don't get in the lounge. Where am I missing out?
Well, you can use your points to get into the lounge. Okay. The lounge. You know what? The lounges are very big in Europe. That's like the thing. Everybody's in the lounge in Europe. I never go to the lounges here in the U.S. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
I can report United opened a lovely lounge finally at De Gaulle, CDG.
Okay.
They opened a lovely lounge.
Did you have a seat there?
I had a seat there.
There you go.
It was very, very lovely.
Of course he did.
Next.
When you get triple, first class,
you get a seat. You definitely get a seat. Tom, I saw this one. I thought of you right away. Will there be a Shogun Season 2?
Oh!
This is the question. Business Insider. Okay, so it's streamed on Hulu. Is that how you watch it, on Hulu?
I think so.
I'm in charge of that. Yeah. So here's the thing. The creators are telling The Hollywood Reporter the show was made so long ago because of lengthy production. It took a long time. It was like a 5-year journey just to make that first season. So if they were to be shooting a second season, they would already have to be shooting already. But they're saying since it took so long, they already got that pre-production work out of the bag. So now it'll be a little bit faster if they were to do a season 2.
Well, I don't know. I'm looking
the
here at
the story.
The
viewers want it. They're asking for it. The Shogun, it was a self-contained novel, but there were a series of novels too.
Maybe.
So it could kind of branch
Mr.
off.
Mr. Clavell gave them their sequel. He wrote 4 or 5 books, and Taipan is after Shogun in his 19th century, 1840, 1850 Hong Kong. And you could even have some of the same characters doing, Anna could show up again anytime. But Clavell gave them the sequel to the Pacific Rim, in this case, Hong Kong, from Japan. But it'll be interesting to see.
Would you
I haven't
watch
seen the last
two?
Episode.
You haven't seen the last?
No, I haven't seen the last one. I'm waiting for Mrs. King to arrive. I'll see it. Actually, I've read the book twice, so I think
you know.
If you haven't read the book, I highly recommend, for those that have seen Shogun, it is a rewarding 1,200 pages. It is what Clavell did. And I should point out also King Rat, of the Singapore, where the Singapore airport is, they bulldozed the prisoner of war camp from World War II.
I didn't know that.
And King Rat is his shortest and his best book. It is, I can't say enough about the intensity. I read it when I was like 15 and I was ruined for years. Lisa Mateo, thank you so much for the newspapers.
This is the Bloomberg Surveillance Podcast, bringing you the best in economics, finance, investment, and international relations. You can also watch the show live on YouTube. Visit the Bloomberg Podcast channel on YouTube to see the show weekday mornings from 7 to 10 a.m. Eastern from our global headquarters in New York City. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or anywhere else you listen. And always on Bloomberg Radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, and the Bloomberg Business App.
Join Bloomberg in San Francisco or virtually on May 7th for The Future Investor, Data-Powered Transformations. This 2024 event series will examine how data is not only playing a pivotal role in investment decisions, but serves as a driving force behind the construction of innovative, investable enterprises. This series is proudly sponsored by Invesco QQQ. Register at BloombergLive.com/futureinvestor/radio.